screeching voice, appeared a poor fellow beside such paragons. The Winston of the post-war years was worse. There was ungraciousness in his response to the people's will, which turned him out of office in 1945, an aura about him of the bad loser. Whatever their parents' political opinions, whatever their own, the young could not help but be touched by the excitement of the social revolution the winning Labour Party promised. Churchill, the opposition politician, put the worst possible face on the socialism it preached. The young took the offers of socialism at face value. A free health service for all sounded self-evidently a good thing, as did school and university scholarships for the clever and hard-working, irrespective of parental ability to pay, better state pensions for the old and the poor, new housing for slum dwellers, and secure employment for the survivors of the pre-war slump. The Labour Party said that it stood for a better Britain, and the young believed. Churchill's warning that a socialist Britain would be worse aroused disbelief, at least among the generation of the future. I was a member of that generation, and remained quite immune to the Churchillian legend throughout my school and university years. Churchill was returned to office in 1951, and despite several setbacks to his health, one almost disabling, remained Prime Minister until 1955.